This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
The time is midday. I am Mark Dolan and this is FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station, 24 hours a day, unregulated, uncensored and free of charge. Now, over the next hour, I'm going to be chewing through the biggest news stories of the week, and it's been a massive, massive week. And here's the thing. FUBAR is all about free speech. We can say exactly what we like. Within libel laws, it's not right to defame someone and say something about them that isn't proven. But otherwise, we are free. We are uncensored, unpasteurized, organic truth all the way. And therefore, we sometimes face anger and, you know, a public desire for rep thingy. And ultimately, we're under threat. Sometimes FUBAR is quite edgy and we get, you know, some bad stuff is sent in our direction. And, you know, it was not quite death threats, but mild harming has definitely been floated with a lot of the on-air talent. But I don't care. And I'll tell you for why. Because at FUBAR, we will always tell the truth. We will always do what's right. We will always go after the funny at any price. Even if I get a like Chinese burn from a disgruntled man in the Holloway area off the back of a controversial broadcast, I don't care. It's why we're here at FUBAR. And also, we're safe because we've actually got Kim Kardashian's security team. So,
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, I think one of the security guards is asleep, but that's fine. Very, very big show today in the company of Leo Kearse. Ladies and gentlemen, say hi.
Are you good today, Leo?
Yeah, I'm good.
Massive week for you?
Yeah, it's pretty big. I bought a car.
You haven't bought a car?
I bought a car.
Are you serious?
£400 car.
No.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's a 15-year-old Polo.
Okay. That's like slightly older than you. I mean, right. Congratulations. And where and why and how? Where'd you get it?
I got it off Darius Davies, the comedian. So, you know
that was your first mistake.
There was that car advert that said when you buy a whatever car, when you buy a Peugeot, you don't just buy a car.
Yes.
It's the same when you buy a car off Darius Davies. You don't just buy a car. You also buy a lot of empty crisp packets and empty water bottles.
And what are you going to be doing with this car?
I'm driving around. I drove here in it. It's brilliant. I'm going to drive to offices in Essex next and do some booking. And then I'm going to drive to a gig tonight.
All right. Can you tell me about the spec? What kind of spec have you got on that car?
It's got a 1.4 engine, super powered. It tops out at about 67 miles an hour on the motorway. It's got a cup holder that isn't attached, so you put your cup in it, you drive off and the cup holder falls out.
Isn't that perfect? Yeah. I'm just as well, because if you had a working cup holder as a Scotsman, that would have permanently a can of Tennent's in it, wouldn't it?
Just to
indulge in some enjoyable stereotypes.
And then I'd get arrested.
Of course you would. Now, Dmitry Bakanov, can you compete with that kind of global news story, which is that Leo Kearse has got a 15-year-old Volkswagen Polo?
No, I'm afraid my week has not been anywhere near as exciting. Unfortunately, although I did just come back from Russia a couple of days ago, did a few gigs out there. So, yeah, I don't know.
Have you no morals whatsoever?
Of course not. Why would I? I'm a comedian. I will do whatever.
Next
the money
thing,
pays.
You'll be fronting a chat show with Katie Hopkins, you scumbag.
Yeah, I'll take that gig now.
Only a real shyster.
Were you performing
would do that.
In Russian?
Yes. Yeah.
Really? What was it like doing comedy in a different language?
Yeah, it was weird because Russian is my first language, but because I've lived in England for so long, my English is a lot better than my Russian. So
yeah.
It was like I was a child again because my Russian stopped developing when I was 11. So that's where I kind of my slang and stuff like that stayed.
So your Russian stopped developing. Is that because of Chernobyl? Is that
What about the crowds in Russia? Are they a little on the kind of reserved side?
No, actually, they're fairly giving. It's weird. They don't laugh. They applaud.
Right.
So if they like a joke, they just all start applauding, which, you know, like in England, working for an applause break is difficult, whereas
correct.
There you kind of
take... It's a career highlight,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I'm still working towards one here. But like you say a mediocre joke there, and they applaud, but then you have to really work hard for the laugh.
It's, yeah.
It's, so it's, it's kind of reversed. It's weird.
Do you think there's any aspect to which sort of this controlling regime affects the way people behave in public, including at a gig? Because I am the world's number one Elton John fan. I am a world-class Elton John obsessive. And Elton John went to Moscow in 1979, which was quite a groundbreaking move because then it really was like North Korea.
Yeah.
And he did a gig and he couldn't understand why people weren't getting up and dancing. And he's Benny and the Jets and Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. And then he noticed security guards were pointing at people that had stood up, make them sit down again.
Wow. Right? Wow. Okay.
Now, I doubt that's the case in 2016, but I still wonder whether there's a slight culture. And I certainly, I mean, in a way, you can authentically tell us as a man with a Russian background, but the impression I have of some of the kind of old Eastern European sort of communist bloc countries is a slight culture where privately you can be yourself and kick back and have a vodka and, you know, but publicly in a public sphere, it's more of a poker face scenario.
Yeah, there is definitely that. There's a bit more of there's an appropriate way to behave. So that's how we're going to do it.
Because I was in Moscow and I just was working there. And at first I just thought everyone's a miserable git. And this is the most, it's nearly as bad as Aberdeen or something. And then I kind of wound up working with people and going to people's homes and stuff. And it's like a whole different story
behind closed doors.
Is that true or is that a cliche that I'm indulging in?
No, I think there's a little bit of that. There is that people don't smile as readily sort of thing, but when you do talk to them it's fine. Yeah. It's weird because obviously I pretty much grew up in England, so I have I say please and thank you all the time. It's weird. Yeah. Because I'd go there and my Russian is clean. I speak it with a Ukrainian accent, but it's clean. Yeah. So I'd speak to people, but I'd be as polite as I would be in England.
Yeah.
And shopkeepers would do a double take and they would just look at me like, are you being polite? Why are you being polite? What's wrong? It's weird.
Do you think, therefore, the culture in Russia, is it more just like a direct culture where they don't bother with these frilly little words and people are straight with each other?
There's a lot more directness.
Give me bread now.
Yeah. Well, there's that. There's 100% that, right?
Because I do that when I go to Greg's because I think those people, they deserve it. If you're working at Greg's, I'm going to punish you. I so don't mean that, by the way.
Yeah, and they could very well be from Eastern Europe. Oh, that Brexit. Too early for Brexit.
Never too early, Curse. Curse, the only person following the actual principle of this show.
Yes, actually talking about the news, yeah.
But we'll kill that stone dead, because I'm busy chatting idly about Russia. But we will definitely come to Brexit. And then, in fact, it dovetails with, in a way, with you as an international man of international background.
Yep.
But so therefore, and what about censorship? Like, are there no-go areas? Because I'm wondering whether if you spout off about Vladimir Putin not being a Democrat or running an evil regime or something, you'd get in trouble, wouldn't you?
Not as much. I'll say I've got a mate who's out there who's an English dude who's an expat, and he's a comic as well. He performs in English at an English night, and one of his tropes is that he goes on stage when he first goes on wearing a Putin mask and just does a crazy silly dance. And his joke is basically, he says at the end of that, he goes, guys, that's basically what I call gambling with my visa.
Oh, great gag.
Yeah,
I think you'll soon be able to do that with a Theresa May mask, Leo Kess.
Is Putin actually seen the same in Russia as he is in the West? Because in the West, we see him as this, you know, horrible dictator, you know, the head of a gangster regime.
Yeah.
Is he seen the same in Russia?
By a lot of people, yes, kind of, but he's not, take away the word horrible, because because what you have there is like the way they see him is they've got all the oligarchs who are crazy rich, effectively super gangsters.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're like, well, we need a super gangster of our own to keep them in check. That's all it is.
And also, Russia has a very, I mean, obviously it's one of the great nations of human history. It's always been an economic power. It's always been a military power. I've got nothing but respect for Russia. I think maybe Shakespeare was the greatest playwright in human history, IMHO, but probably the greatest novelist, Leo Tolstoy. So there's one in the eye for the Russians. You know, Russian classical music, incredible. Prokofiev et al. So therefore, and some great thinkers and philosophers and artists and everything else. So I'm all about Russia. It's incredible. But I wonder whether there's something in the Russian psyche which is a tremendous sort of almost Machiavellian national pride, which means that although it's terrible for them to have Putin in charge because the economy is shot to pieces, the regime is corrupt and the foreign policy is you know, evil or immoral or questionable. With all of that, now you're allowed
viewed from a very specific prism. Yes.
Definitely, and jump in and disagree. And that's just my view. And I certainly don't think the West have covered themselves in any glory in recent years in the Middle East. But anyhow, but whether something in the Russian psyche which goes, he's a terrible man, but he's our terrible man. And there's a kind of, this image of him on the horse, topless and fishing, and it's enough just to keep the Russians on board.
No, it's just, so again, those images, they're interpreted differently in a different culture. That's it. Yeah. So they don't translate well to this culture. Just as, certain images from over here don't translate well over there, which I can't draw any examples of right now. But there are certain things that just don't
translate. Well, maybe it's like when politicians have had an affair and then they're pictured with their family on the garden gate looking sort of all perfect and everything. That's quite risible, isn't it?
So there is a lot of that. Like, Putin famously doesn't want to talk about his private life.
And he doesn't have to.
No, he doesn't have to. That's the thing that's allowed to him because he is Putin. But
I mean, what I'm really curious about is Putin in a strong position because he's popular, or is he in a strong position because he has control? That was such a good question, wasn't it?
They both hold each other.
I mean, I would never say a gag was funny because as a comedian, I can't do that. But I can say that was an amazing question.
Are you auditioning for Newsnight or something like that?
God, it was. I mean, there was almost a tear in your eye when I said that.
I pulled out a notepad and struck
my
chin.
I don't think it was a tear in your eye. It was meow meow abuse. We'll get on to that. Leo takes a lot of drugs.
I'm allergic to cats. That's why I got a tear.
Yeah, what do you think? Is it popularity or just control?
A bit of both.
Really? Yeah.
A bit of both. I mean, and to be fair, I know almost nothing about politics. So take that.
It is quite a funny version. I mean, it is wrong for a country like Britain, which is very flawed, to laugh at other countries. But Russian democracy is pretty hysterical, isn't it, Leo? I mean, it's like every so often they have an election, and amazingly, Putin always wins. He's so popular, that guy.
Yeah.
He just always wins. And the other thing is, his enemies, they keep dying. I mean, he must be the luckiest.
or sent to the gulags. I mean, he sent Mikhail Khodorkovsky to the gulags like a modern-day Stalin.
This guy is just a lucky politician.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's your perception of Russia? Are we wrong? Have we got Russophobia here?
I've dated a couple of Russian girls, and they're great.
Well,
they're
not dating if you pay for it.
It's the radio, but I've just given Dimitri a high five.
I appreciate that you think I could afford Russian women. They're really like ballsy, just incredibly strong, no bullshit people from what I've met. I met a lot of Russian people in Egypt. I was there when all the troubles started about 5 years ago.
Paint quite a picture of yourself. Bit of a sex tourist, aren't you?
I don't think anybody goes. Nobody goes to Egypt. There's two places that people don't go to as a sex tourist. Those places are Egypt and Aberdeen. So
you're right. I went. I actually had a sex tour of Egypt and went up with some guy called Mohammed, who was in his early 60s, with 12 children. It wasn't good. Yeah. He'd really let himself go.
He expected you to father more children.
Fred said he tried. Yeah. He definitely tried. It wasn't for the want of trying to impregnate me. But let's talk about Britain, which could well be the focus of international ridicule in the way that Russia has been in some quarters because of what Brexit is starting to shape up as and what it's starting to look like. Now, Theresa May, the recently installed Prime Minister, has said she'll fire the starting pistol of Brexit in March, or by the end of March of next year. That's a 2-year process. The bottom line is, unless anything seismic happens, such as her decision to call a snap election, you never know, that could happen. But in principle, if things are going the way they're supposed to go, in terms of the parliamentary calendar, we'll be out of the EU before the next election, which will be in 2020. The big debate is what this European Union relationship is going to look like, what Brexit is going to look like. We've also had a flavour from Theresa May about that as well. It seems like the mood music is the hard Brexit. Now, if we look at the two options, the hard Brexit and the soft Brexit, clearly a lot of you know this. Forgive me for teaching my grandmother to suck eggs, but here we go. Soft Brexit is essentially that we leave the European Union, but we stay within the single market, which means accepting free movement from the EU and also having the benefit of being able to sell stuff to Europe without paying any taxes, any tariffs. So there you go. Some people say, well, wait a minute, that's like being in the EU without the advantages. Then you've got hard Brexit, which involves leaving the single market altogether. And what that then means is us having to negotiate with Europe about how much they will charge us if we want to sell stuff to them, and all sorts of other logistical, administrative implications. The bottom line with hard Brexit is business doesn't like it, because what it means is Nissan and any number of other companies will be concerned at the idea of it costing them more to be a business in Britain selling to Europe. So that's the great debate, soft versus hard. And it looks like at the moment the mood music is for hard. An example of that is yesterday, the Home Secretary, speaking in her speech at the Conservative Party conference, has said she will entreat and order UK businesses to prove that they've tried to hire British workers first. OK, now this obviously won't come into effect straight away, but certainly once we have full control of our borders post-Brexit, in principle, you can legislate to do that. But Leo, who wants to live in a country like that? I mean, the last thing we need is English people making our food again.
It's okay, Mark. We've got the recipes. We can let
really?
Them go now.
Is that it?
We've got YouTube videos. We can just follow them.
We've got Delia online.
We've got the plants and the spices and stuff already. We can just grow more. It's going to be fine. I mean, I can understand why people think that this is bad, but it's something that most Western countries do. If you try to work in America as a comedian, you've got to prove that people are coming specifically to see you.
Really?
Otherwise, you're taking work away from a hard working American circuit comedian and you'll get kicked out of the country. It's happened to my friend earlier this year.
That's remarkable. Wow. Yeah. And how do we feel about Britain being that kind of country? Because surely we've thrived on the fact that we're very welcoming to foreign talent. I hate the word foreign, but international talent. We have a fantastic English raised but Russian born comedian. You're a Scotsman.
Yeah.
My parents are Irish. I'm married to a German. You enjoy the company of Russian prostitutes. I just think we are an open country.
Well, the economy is doing incredibly well because, you know, everybody comes to London, everybody comes to England, works hard, feeds the money making machine. But the wealth generated from all this work isn't being distributed fairly throughout the population.
Yeah.
But also the costs of that. So the cost of the increase strain on infrastructure, the lack of housing, there hasn't been any work done to ameliorate those effects. So we're really seeing the benefits just given to the rich, and then the poor people who tended to vote for Brexit haven't seen the benefits and have just seen the bad effects. Wages kept low because of competition. House prices are increasing. It's impossible to buy a house in London. So really, we need to take care of the infrastructure problems and these sort of imbalances in society. And then, you know, the issue of people coming to the country won't be such a big issue.
All right. Okay. I mean, I think my concern, Dimitri, is it's a very nuanced thing and it's hard to really put your finger on it. It's not tangible, but I just hate the idea of the atmosphere in the country changing.
Okay.
The vibe. I mean, we've seen racial attacks on the increase. I've got the most shocking story for you, and it's from my good lady wife. And yesterday, a friend of hers was having coffee in Crouch End, which is a leafy little kind of outpost of North London.
Yeah, the last place you'd expect anything bad to happen.
It's very liberal, isn't it? Very bohemian. So this lady is French, and she hooked up with her other French friend, and they were chatting over a coffee in French, as you do. And some bloke, some old git walked past, and that was ages, but there you go. And he said, can't you talk English? You are in England, you know. Right now, my missus thinks that would never have happened pre-Brexit. It's somehow empowered the thugs and the racists and the xenophobes. It's like they've actually been validated and now they're walking with their chests pumped out and their head held high.
Yeah, so but just because they misunderstand that doesn't make it, you know, it doesn't make that's what Brexit was about. It doesn't necessarily make it true. Again, it's like, you know, how when racists to effectively try to take over the English flag.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean it was for them. They just tried to take it, you know, use it.
So are you telling me that it's a storm in a teacup and it will all, in a way, it'll all sort of settle down and it's a kind of little brief enjoyment of moment in the sun these
yes,
people are having.
Yes, plus also I think those stories get more traction in the media now than they would have done before because there's a reason for
God,
them to
be
pushed out.
That was a really... I mean, my question earlier was really good about Russia, wasn't it, Leo?
Yeah.
I thought that answer was excellent.
I feel like I've got to up my game here. This is
no, you always... You just got a cough and you've delivered, Leo Curse. We're happy just to have your DNA in the show. As is that lady you were with last night. What was she called again? Tatiana? Yeah. Real name Vladimir, but that's another story. Okay, well, that's it. We've got Tory party conference today. The new Prime Minister is making her speech. What would you guys favour? By the way, were either of you pro-Brexit out of interest?
No.
I was pro-Remain, but only grudgingly.
So are you, there's so much jargon, but I think you've got these people called soft believers. No, sorry, soft remainers and hard remainers.
Yeah.
And a soft remainer is somebody who wanted to stay in the EU, but now it's happened, thinks it'll probably be all right. Let's not panic.
Yep.
Is that
you?
That's
me.
Wow. Now, how have you come to be a soft? I would have had you down as a hard remainer, as a Brit, as a Scotsman, as a man of this soil.
Yeah, yeah.
And also as a classic sort of left-leaning liberal entertainer.
Well, I mean Europe, we're all one big, we share a lot of like common values and ideals.
Yeah.
And also you got to remember there's the rise of economically there's the rise of China, so if we're a big unified trading bloc then we can parlay with them easier. Also, like in the east, like Russia's invaded like Ukraine, it's invaded other places, I can't remember their names, but it's that's a real threat.
People, it's certainly a very pugnacious,
20 years
pugnacious policy in terms of Syria as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, yeah. Proxy war there between the West, and the West is really failing the Syrian people. I think they should be going out and like bombing the airports, bombing the runways, so Russia can't launch these planes and then bomb hospitals.
Yeah.
I think we're really like we've got a duty of care to the Syrian people.
I feel like
people.
I have to, Russia does not just bomb hospitals.
It has been bombing hospitals.
There's been the occasional strikes which nobody can prove, especially with that convoy that happened 2 weeks ago
He's only saying this because he's got a corporate gig in Moscow.
Yeah, exactly.
How much they paying you for this?
I got to defend it.
He's hosting a dinner
there's
dance.
There's some like 20% of aid convoys actually reach their destination without...
Yeah, but it's not because Russia's bombing every single one of them. Do you know what I mean?
The recent taking down of a plane of aid workers was... Well, certainly the West have said that they can only have been a Russian attack. I mean, I know where we stand on that.
Okay, first of all, that I don't know about.
Yeah.
The convoy that got destroyed like a few weeks ago. Again, there are stories on one side of the media that are saying it got bombed by a Russian plane, but apparently it was a Russian plane up in the sky about it. But like the official response from Russia is, if you look at the pictures that show it, that it's not been bombed. There aren't craters in the ground that would have shown an air-to-ground strike. So it's been attacked on the ground. Again, that could be by Russia. I don't know who was attacked on the ground by, but that, again, Russia gets treated as a boogeyman a lot of the time.
Now, do you think it's predominantly, do you think any of it's fair or not?
I think
you need boogeyman. That's the boogeyman. That's it.
Russia's actually
like to
trying
boogie.
To create. Russia's trying to create a situation. Russia created the refugee crisis with escalating and intensifying the war in Syria and supporting Assad. It would have fallen against
the
rebels.
Syria an impossible place to live.
England was pro bombing in Syria.
No,
as
listen.
Well. And
listen,
going,
we were.
And dude,
we were just.
I'm British. I've got a British passport. Yep. And that's fine.
We were just bombing ISIS. I mean, there might have been some collateral damage. We didn't have this. Putin's gone in there with this strategy of annihilating whole like cities. So then the people, the cities, you can't live in them. And then the people have to like leave as refugees. And then they come north to Europe. And he's caused this refugee crisis. It's caused the breakup of Europe.
Even now, the arguments that you have in Parliament against taking refugees or pro-taking refugees from Syria is not hey, guys, Putin created this problem, but we have to clean it up. It's no, the argument in Parliament is that we created this problem. We need to help clean it up and we need to be part of the solution.
No, that's not the argument in Parliament. The argument is that there's refugees. And we should take them. I mean,
yeah, and we're not really looking at the problem, but we, I mean, British people.
What's the conspiracy theory about Russia and its actions in Syria?
It's not a conspiracy theory. It's openly known. I mean, this is stuff. If you read The Economist or whatever, you'll be able to read like cogent analysis from political experts and stuff.
I always try to read The Economist, my local news agent, but what my
for free?
He's got this.
It takes a lot longer than Viz.
Oh, he's very clever. I know, he actually has it upside down, so I have to turn my head to read it for free. And in my age, I'm 42, I can't do that because it's like a sciatic nerve thing. Because I've been reading The Sun upside down for decades now, so I can't do it. But the allegation is essentially to cause chaos in Europe by provoking. By the way, I'm just going to say, in fairness to balance, that this is the allegation: is create a refugee crisis in order to what? Just make life difficult in Europe.
Well, as you've seen, it led to the breakup of Europe. I mean, the refugees flowing north, you know, pretty much precipitated the Brexit yes vote, the vote to leave. And then,
so you think this is a master strategy by Russia to like, that was the entire plan? It's not so much. I mean, out of Syria.
If you look at the way Putin operates, he's very much a sort of opportunist. So I mean, he does have this master strategy to sort of you know, fight against the West. Russia's been feeling very under threat from NATO, from you know, the EU expanding east into former Soviet countries such as Ukraine. So you've seen them like, you know, seize back areas. So this is part of the same proxy war.
Okay, so okay, fine, and you think that was Russia's master plan X number of years ago?
No, I think Putin saw the opportunity and he went for it. Also, it's a massively complicated situation.
So it's weird because I can't be viewed impartially like on this because obviously I've got Russian heritage and Russian roots, right? Whereas when it comes to matters such as this and pretty much anything else, I'm impartial. I don't take anything personally. It's just, it feels weird for me to be like defending Russia like this. But I honestly do think that the West has a lot to play as well.
It's massively.
Do you mean because we get brought up in a culture where it's like good versus evil, and one side has to be good, one side has to be evil. It's just a bunch of players who have.
That's not what I'm saying. I mean, like the West went into the Middle East, you know, with the all these revolutions that took place,
destabilized entire regions. Yeah,
If Russia
had invaded Iraq in the way that we did and left it all fucked up afterwards, would Russia have taken it in the neck PR wise?
How long are people going to use it? Iraq was a huge mistake, but you can't really blame that on the current governments because that was 20 years ago, you know what I mean? Mm. Or however long ago it was. Mm.
Was the quasi-religious leader Tony Blair.
Yeah, and George W. Bush. Mm. But Syria, I mean, it's an enormously complicated issue. Loads of regional players in there. And it's a proxy war, not just between the West and Russia, but also between, like, Sunnis and Shiites and Turkey and the Kurds and everybody. Yes, yeah. Everybody's in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, go on. Did you want to finish that point?
So, yeah, it's a mess, but Putin isn't exactly helping by bombing hospitals.
What I'll then say, Dmitry, again for balance, but maybe this is a kind of way around this, is that in terms of Russia, which, as I said, is a remarkable country, it's vast as well, and, you know, I'm whenever I go there, I find it the most interesting country, but... is it let down and hindered by this totalitarian bully at the head of it? If you really love Russia, surely you hate Putin because he's not a Democrat, is he?
No, he's not. He's not a true Democrat. Not by the
I mean,
way
how is he?
Well,
how
definitely.
Is he worth more than £1 billion as a former civil servant and now politician? How did that happen?
I don't know about the valuation.
He's considered to be a billionaire, isn't he?
Multi-billionaire.
Yeah, he would be.
That's amazing. What is that? Just good. I think maybe he had an ISA.
I've been telling you about these public sector pensions. They're getting out of hand.
Obviously, there must be something that goes on. I don't know. It's not like he's my uncle. Do you know what I mean? I don't know his business dealings.
But it doesn't
jive well. But that's, you know, those are the drawbacks.
I wish that you were the British Foreign Secretary, because then you could go around at press conferences saying things like, it doesn't jive well. And I think we'd have world peace within days.
Because
people in Syria would be like, it's true. It just doesn't jive well. I think it would almost certainly be a hashtag. And I think Dmitry Bakunov could probably change the world. I mean, he'll still take those Russian corporate gigs because the guy's got to live.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, look, we've had a ding dong. We never normally, it never normally gets heated on the show, and I consider
that. It got
heated
quickly.
Yeah, and I consider that a success. It's a tremendous thing. We are going to take a break. We've got big questions for you after this. We've got a question about actually affairs and infidelity. Is infidelity necessarily wrong? Dynasty is coming back. Are there other shows that you'd like to see return? Kirsty Allsop, the TV estate agent lady, fat shamed someone in a tweet recently. Oh. And so the question is it fat shaming or is it just re-education? We'll also talk about TripAdvisor and online website reviews and Amazon reviews and all that sort of stuff. Who can we believe anymore? That and much, much more. Great to have you on board. If you want to interact, at FUBAR Radio, donut at FUBARradio.com. We're going to play a record now, and this is by the outstanding Wild Beast, Alpha Female. It's normally what Leo asks for when he goes into a Russian brothel. I ask a shaman, ask a priest.
When We Waffle with Terry Miner, Kat Fox and Laurie Peters.
Go! Dan! Get to the radio! It's important that you listen to When We Waffle with Larry Peters, Cat Fox, and Terry Manott. And it's also on a Thursday from 12 to 1 on FUBAR Radio! Go! Learn!
Every Thursday,
When We Waffle with Terry Manott, Cat Fox, and Larry Peters.
From 12 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. It's Mark Dolan in the company of two world-class comedians, Dmitry Bakunov and Leo Kurse, who are both back and fresh from hit shows at the Edinburgh International Festival Fringe. You guys had vintage years, I know that. Plaudits were received. Awards were won, tickets were sold, blowjobs were received. I didn't need
it's
to
just
do it.
One of those things
I just
is
wish
true.
Yeah, one of those things is true.
That was right. Did I, as a comedian and comedians and judges, was that? Did I go too far with that?
No.
The blowjob, is that too much?
No.
You sure?
No.
Really? Even for this time of day? 12:34?
Yeah.
Cross the line?
It's fine. People have blowjobs during the midday.
Really? Yeah, I remember. that. Now, look, let's talk about a couple of things. First of all, I quite like the look of this story. It just intrigues me slightly. Mother's fury after Sainsbury's delivery driver told her four-year-old son he should be a superhero, not wear a sparkling fairy dress. Now, it's a really, really cute kid, adorable child, age four, called Isaac Armitage. He was playing with his little sister and they were doing dressing up stuff. And the delivery driver, and the thing is, you know, I don't know if you guys have, well, obviously all of us in our lives, we have somebody that brings something to our home occasionally, whether it's an Amazon parcel or if it's internet shopping or whatever. But we have this interaction, and I think it's a brand new thing, and it's like it's a contemporary phenomenon, Dmitry, which is somebody at your doorstep again, which I guess my parents grew up with, and I grew up with in the 70s. Obviously, the postman would deliver post, but you'd also have
and
like
milkman.
Milk.
Milkman.
And who'd deliver more than milk, allegedly, right? Became a thing of folklore. God, you're so naive. And all of that stuff is, you know, it's sort of quite retro, but it's coming back, and that you've got these tradesmen and trades females who come to your home. And thanks for that.
That wasn't, you are so right on.
Well, I live near Crouch End. One of my production team is a female, and she'll kill me if I'm not right and correct about everything. So yeah, it's a kind of, I don't know, it's a 21st century thing. You're like, you're having to interact with people in your private sphere again. And so what's happened is that, you know, this little boy has done the dressing up thing. And I think, you know, in sympathy to the delivery guy, he's just, because I got kids and we get some deliveries and they were like, oh, all right, what are you doing today? Are you playing with your toys, whatever? I think it's quite sweet if this, normally it's a big burly bloke who the kids look at as some kind of sort of retail superhero, right? And you know, he's in his branded uniform and he's got some big box as a parcel and it's just an exciting thing for a child to behold. So if one of these blokes sort of, with also a massive van with lots of doors and drawers and all that business, right? So when you're a kid, this guy's like, wow, he's the thing, you know. So this guy is just like, oh, what are you doing wearing a dress? You should be Superman or Spider-Man. I don't think it was a homophobic attack.
Yeah.
I think it was banter. But what's interesting about it, clearly, in a way, this guy, the delivery driver, has shown some of his own archaic thinking and prejudices, because it's like, well, there's no problem, is there, with little boys wearing dresses and stuff? I mean, can we all agree that that's fine?
Well, it's kind of fine, but he's definitely going to get bullied at school.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? The delivery driver's doing him a favour. Like, imagine if the delivery driver opened the door, like, all his schoolmates walked past, they're like, get in a dress, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's probably banned. You're probably not allowed to bully people anymore. And that's why if we have a war, Russia's going to win. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like that. So your angle with the delivery driver is don't shoot the messenger.
Well, I think, I mean, it is fine for the kid to wear whatever he wants. He's just playing, you know, it's absolutely fine, whatever he wants to do. But for the mother to complain about the delivery driver saying this, I mean, he probably didn't have the benefit of this indulgent, liberal, middle-class education and background that she's had. So, like, to take him, you know, some burly guy is taking all the knocks in life and to say, you know, he's not like me, he's not professor of gender studies at, you know, Harvard University. Come on, he's a delivery guy. That's what do you expect a delivery guy to do?
Yeah, and he's not enlightened, and neither will the teenagers be, who will be kicking seven flavours of shit out of this kid once he gets to secondary school.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
How about you, Dmitry? I mean, have you had any encounters with you know, the delivery people and stuff like that? Because I find it weird. Like, I've got an ethical question for you. Can you receive a parcel in your boxer shorts?
It's got to be a small parcel. Right.
Boom. Leo Kurs here all week.
Nice.
Try the veal.
Yeah, yeah, no, I don't think it's appropriate because nobody needs to see that.
Especially if we're rocking a semi, that's always going to be. You're like, I'm so sorry. I've been waiting for this waffle iron for so long. It's not you.
I've had that situation before, whereas I just ran and put a bathrobe on and then went to the door because.
Yeah, but that's, I think that's sexier, isn't it? A bathrobe.
It depends how you wear.
Was it like a silk?
Well, like a smoking, like Hugh Hefner smoking jacket.
Was it tight fitting?
No. Who has a tight fitting?
Did your nipples punch through the sort of flow of silk? No, it wouldn't make sense. It's supposed to be fluffy and overgrown, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the whole point, yeah.
What about, where do you stand on what you can wear, like, if you leave your home? Let's say you're putting out bins. Do you? I mean, I've been half naked putting bins out 2 a.m.
No, again, just maximum, a vest. It's a minimum, sorry. Minimum is a vest.
Yeah. Because, you wouldn't go topless with your empties?
No, nor would I go there in my boxer shorts.
Really?
Need some decency, man.
But the thing is, I always think boxer shorts are a great innovation because they look exactly like shorts. This is my argument. Yeah. You know, what's the difference? I mean, I would agree that Y fronts.
No, they look like shorts from the 80s. They don't look like shorts from this day.
Would you receive a parcel or any other such delivery in your boxes?
Hey, you know what? You can get out of paying your TV license if you answer the door in your pants. It's amazing. I had the TV license people come to my door. This was about 8 years ago, nine years ago.
This is a life hack.
They came to the door, and like I genuinely wasn't. I was just using the TV for like Xbox and stuff like that. They came to the door, and like I was hungover. I was bleary eyed. I opened the door, and the guy was like, "Have you got a TV?" And I was like, "Yeah, but I just used it for Xbox." And I was like, "Come on in!" Like grabbed his. Come on in.
Let's have a drink.
And he was like, "No, it's fine. I'll just tick on the form that you don't need to pay."
Right.
So no TV. Like that saved me about £1,000 so far.
Right. It's the fault of Leo Kurs's Y fronts that the BBC couldn't afford Bake Off.
Yeah.
You are guilty as charged. Well, as a lovely segue, and Dimitri, keeping the show on track for once, has raised the question of life hacks, because there are a variety of so-called ingenious life hacks for common beauty mistakes, including a finger trick that stops lipstick from smudging on your teeth. We live very much, don't we, in the era of life hacks. We're in a kind of life hacks sort of moment. I wonder, I'm not sure where it started, Dimitri, but I think it's something to do with the downturn and the recession and the global economic crisis, because what happened is people started fixing stuff that was broken rather than replace it. Mm. And people also started innovating sort of cheap solutions to everyday problems. And I just think it came from, there's definitely been a correction in our culture of disposability and chucking stuff, consumer.
Yes, yeah.
I do think that's changed. The hipster has arrived. We know hipsters is all about repairing old record players and rebuilding motorcycles and going around on some 1930s weird bicycle thing that they've just hand soldered. And, and I personally am a big fan of that. And the internet is rife with these sort of life hack solutions.
Yeah.
And I was curious if you guys have any yourselves.
Ooh, I'm trying to think.
Because I can I'll chuck a couple in your direction. I mean, this is not an exciting one, but it's just life changing, which is I have only one kind of sock in my life. I know it's the radio, so I'm just going to... They are a grey-black Marks & Spencer's Woolrich socks.
Woolrich?
They are 3 for £11, which is not cheap, but they're very hardy.
Right, yeah.
They're very hardy. And they're very breathable in the summer and quite warm in the winter. So it's a kind of complete 365 solution in terms of foot clothing. So I've got that. But only one colour. And the reason is because you know what it's like. The odd socks thing will drive you mad. So if you only have one colour of sock, no more odd socks. If one gets a hole in, you throw it away. Who cares? Also, you don't have this thing with the lucky socks. Have you ever suffered from the lucky sock syndrome?
No.
Right, I'll share it with you. Which maybe it's because I'm OCD, but I had a pair of weird sort of yellow socks which had these little creatures on them, right? These little ostriches or something. They were wacky comedy socks, okay? And I only had one pair someone had given to me. And I remember I wore them and had a really good day. Great stuff happened. Okay, and that was fine. And then about a week later, I wore them again and had another great day and great stuff happened. Immediately, ergo, they've
socks,
become
yeah.
the lucky socks. And then I had a day when I really tough gig, big gig in the evening, and lots of good stuff needed to happen. And I couldn't find one of my lucky socks. Carnage,
yeah.
right? So therefore, I only have one kind of sock in my life. And therefore, the other one is, okay, here's a really nice one, free Starbucks.
How'd you get this?
Yeah,
amazing. What you do is you go to Starbucks, you go to where the coffee is ready, and they write the name, they write everyone's name on the cup, okay? So you've just got to read the name and be that person. It's amazing, right? I swear, this morning, 2 hours ago, I was Fernando. Right, and I was very method about it. Do you know what I mean? I did the accent. I had a big Mexican hat. I fully blacked up, and people were just like, "So that's quite it." But I mean, it's definitely. I would encourage and laud this sort of culture. The other thing I think, Dimitri, is I feel it's to do with social media, the good side of social media, which is about pooling resources and sharing information, sharing tips. So
yes.
Life Hacks is very much about, oh, have you tried this? This is great. This is what I do.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I think one of the reasons Life Hacks are as popular as they are now is because people don't live as with their parents as much as they used to before, so they don't take on as many kind of ways to deal with the world and whatever from their parents.
Yeah.
So they found a new way of learning the skills that you need, but it's just through Life Hacks. And also there's the fact that technology is developing now faster than it ever has before. So there's more and more stuff for you to have to deal with. So a lot of the life hacks that you, I've seen online and stuff like that, they're all about, you know, the way you manage your apps and what apps you have and stuff like that. And it's effectively things to manage the new technology that you have.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think we do need that. I mean, I'm not a Luddite. I adore my smartphone. I love my laptop. I love social media predominantly. I think that 2016 is a good place to be mostly.
Amazing.
We wouldn't give up most of what we've got now. But then it seems to be an unending thing, right? Because I think when we have life hacks as a population and as a community, the solutions are quite often analog, and it's to do with making a pair of slippers out of an Evian bottle or something like that. It's quite sweet. Unfortunately, huge, great multinational corporations are trying to hack our lives too, to make our lives easier. But they're using technology with a huge sort of, you know, environmental footprint as a result. So it's been announced this week that Nike are going to have self-tying shoelaces on their trainers.
Like in Back to
yes,
the Future!
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God!
That's how they're being marketed.
Well, we can stop like all R&D now. We've reached peak technology.
It's over. So they're going to be sold in from mid-November.
Their shoes, they've got to be sold.
They're definitely nicely done. And they are a pair of shoes with a tiny lithium-ion battery and small motors. And then the laces are essentially internal laces. They're almost like tendons, and you have a minus and a plus, and you plus just to tighten them up.
And that seems a bit of overkill, like having all that apparatus, having like robot shoes just to avoid. Like, I mean, how hard is it?
I mean,
had trouble tying your shoelaces since you're three?
No.
But this is the beauty.
I just get on my fairy costume, tie my shoes. It's easy.
But I just wonder. I was like, enough already with all this progress, Dimitri. Do you know what I mean?
I don't agree. I think we need progress and as much as we possibly can have. And the only thing is, you have to be smart about it, right? You don't queue up for five days probably to get these Nike shoes, which are going to be clunky and not ideal, right? What you do is you wait for the 10th generation of this shoe,
right.
And then you get that one.
Yeah.
Which will have like your Facebook on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which will be great. This is what I do with most of the technologies, right? This is, you know, because they had this thing where they tried to get Parliament, because, you know, Parliament keeps all their records on vellum sheets, all their laws on vellum sheets in England.
Oh,
right?
Do they?
Now,
what is a vellum sheet?
Isn't it lambskin or something?
Yeah, it's lambskin, basically, because it keeps for 500 years.
Right, yeah.
And so they recently tried to start a campaign, which is cruel to animals or whatever. They said, they're like, oh, no, because we have digital technology. Why don't we keep it digitally? And that's because the thing about the vellum sheet is it's proven to work for the last 500 years.
Yeah. Correct.
The problem is, you try finding a floppy disk player right now.
Digital stuff is so ephemeral. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, what happens if one of those servers in California that's holding the photos of your kids gets blown up or catches fire?
Yeah, there's a big earthquake.
There's an earthquake or something else. Definitely. And also, most people don't back up anyway, so their precious photos are on a smartphone, which is about to be stolen.
Yeah.
So I do know what you mean. I just I love the progress, but I just thought a pair of running shoes was a great analog solution. It's like, if that's one device that didn't need fixing, it was running shoes.
Yeah, if the technological solution saved you half an hour or something, unless you've got like, you know, one finger, like it's not gonna help you much.
No, but imagine if you're a parent, Mark. How long did it take you to teach your kids to tie their shoes?
A long time. It is very hard to do.
There you go. You see, time saving, right?
But then we're becoming
don't bother spending any time with your kids.
We're becoming too dependent on technology. I mean, if you ever do a gig in like anywhere near Gloucester and you drive out to the middle of the countryside and then you come out of the gig, you're like, great, you turn on your sat nav and you can't get like any signal on your phone. And it's like, yeah, you've just got to drive into the night. You don't know where you're going, could fall off the edge of the world. And also, like, some of these advancements, like, you know, these self-tying, how many man hours, how many, like, you know, intelligent scientists and designers were used developing those shoes instead of, like, you know, developing a cure for cancer or something that's actually going to be useful?
No, there's already people developing a cure for cancer.
Yeah, but we have to work in different directions.
Listen, we have to work in different directions. All it is, right, what it does is it gives that scientist that that's working on developing a cure for cancer, right? It gives him time in the day because now he doesn't need to tie his shoelaces. It all works together and it all feeds itself.
That's a very nice counter argument. But Leo, you nailed it there with all these brains who are being paid money to develop these things, resource. And also, do you know what? I've got one thing, and I'm on my own on this. It's not a particularly compelling point, but I feel it quite strongly. I think there should be some kind of tax on anything with a lithium-ion battery in it. Because the bottom line is, anything with a battery in it is toxic for the world. I think the smartphone is a price worth paying. I don't mind hurting the environment a bit for the... That's terrible, isn't it? For the functionality that my cell phone gives me, because I do a lot of different things with it. Because of my smartphone, I don't need a separate camera. So in a sense, it's quite eco if it's doing lots of things in one device with one lithium-ion battery.
And things like sat-nav save huge amounts of petrol.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, really good point.
That's amazing.
Oh,
yeah, that's
nicely done. Curse. So, I think it's just like everything now, which is it's got to vibrate, it's got to have a battery in, it's got to make it's got to have its own ringtone. Do you know what I mean? And I just think maybe we just need to have the essentials and not just have... I mean, I was in Primark recently and they were selling these keyboards, which is a Bluetooth keyboard, which you can use with a tablet or a smartphone. It's a small keyboard in a leatherette case. And they must have had like 200 of them just piled up. There was like an island of these things at the Primark in Oxford Street. And by the way, you know, Primark's a remarkable business and everything. But I just thought, God, we don't need that shit. And then I think they were £3 a pop.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. I need one of those.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah,
they're like, the proper ones are like 30, 40, 50 quid, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're knocking these out for £3 a go. Yeah. And I'm like, credit to them for striking such a great deal with the suppliers.
Yeah.
But I just like, the cheapness of this technology is just so bad for the world. It just terrifies me. I did a gig in France and I went to this hotel. And you know, sometimes when you go to a hotel, there's like a little gift, which might be like a couple of thin mints on the pillow or something like that. Or maybe a half bottle of wine, if you're really lucky, or a bowl of fruit. So I get to this hotel, and it's a very pleasant hotel, but not, by the way, a fancy. You're looking at a kind of good 3-star hotel.
Yeah.
And the gift on the pillow for every new guest was a battery pack, sort of a lithium-ion extra battery pack.
Right.
You know, the sort of cube things. I'm not going to even know what it's called.
I've got one in my car.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And of course, they are necessary. They're very handy. Yeah. And it carries a bit more. But the fact that these are now just being given away, I'm like, this is on every pillow. And some people are just going to chuck it in the bin. Some people aren't going to use it. It's gonna, and I just thought, oy vey.
Yeah. Well, they are kind of essential because, I mean, modern smartphones last about 27 minutes from when you unplug them from the wall. I mean, they're wafer thin, but that comes at a price.
Well, I mean, look, I suppose I feel, you know, we've bashed Russia a bit today. I'm going to bash America, the context being that America invented convenience culture. And we love them for that. Yeah. You know, America has been consistently, over the last 50 or 60 years, the most innovative country in the world. And they've given the world the smartphone. They've given the world Levi's 501s, Coca-Cola, and God knows what else. But clearly, convenience is a thing the Americans do. They invented the drive-through restaurant. The latest thing now is a MasterCard, which is a credit card, which allows you to pay using a selfie.
No.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So the way it goes is that it's the new technology for Europe, and they can authorize payments with selfies because it's a selfie pay service. It feels like April Fool's, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like an update of Van Gogh paying for his rent.
Just a bit. Picture. You're right. It uses facial recognition to confirm the identity of customers when paying online. Now, we already have contactless, which I guess we're enjoying. Then you've got Apple Pay, which means that or Google Pay as well, where you wave your smartphone at this device. Now you've got the cell. It's fine, but just how easy is life supposed to get?
Yeah.
I mean, is it a hassle punching your PIN number into a device? I feel like I'm being very archaic here.
I actually think taking a selfie is more hassle than putting a number in.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't get how that's any easier. Do you know what I'm saying? Before I had to put 4 digits in, now I have to take a picture of my face.
And not just that, but you've got to find the right angle.
I got to look good.
You got that thing where you're looking up so you don't see the double chin. I know. Well, it's a concern, but it's coming and it can't be stopped. A quick word, and we're out of time actually, and we haven't really touched on this, and it is the biggest news story of the week, and it's the raid on the Kardashians' hotel room. Kim Kardashian,
they stole her battery pack.
So they did. She is allegedly the victim of a raid on her apartment, her rented apartment in Paris, in which it's claimed upwards of £8 million worth of jewellery was stolen. Now, I had a dilemma. I was going to send a tweet about it this week, and it's not a funny tweet. It was just a point I was going to make. And the tweet was as follows. Kim Kardashian, the price of bling. And I decided not to send it because what the tweet was aiming at was to say, look, and Karl Lagerfeld, who's the fashion designer, is in the press today saying, if you flaunt your wealth like that, you're going to be a target, go figure. So his argument is this level of greed, conspicuous consumption, consumerism is bound to come, like end in tears, essentially. I didn't send the tweet because I thought, I think it is the price of bling. I think she's paying for that bling. But I don't think that anybody deserves to be locked in a bathroom and have their jewellery stolen and also be threatened with their lives. So that's why I didn't send it.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think?
I actually like a lot of the stories that talk about this being a PR stunt.
Yeah.
Because I really want this to be a PR stunt.
Yeah.
Because it'll show the people, you know how everybody's always like, oh, it's easy to be, a celebrity, in the age of, you know, you don't have to have any talent, you just have to take pictures.
Famous for being famous.
Dude, if this is a PR stunt, right, she's taking chances with the law, she's taking chances with the insurance people that are going to come after her. This shows...
Like, she could spend the rest of her life in jail if this was a hoax, couldn't
exactly,
she? Because if you call the police and it's all fake, then that's called wasting police time, which is an offence.
Yeah, and also, you know, because it can't, you know, if this is a PR stunt, those jewels had to go missing. She couldn't just tell her insurance company, hey, don't worry about it. So then it's insurance
like we
fraud.
Do when we've been on holiday.
Yeah,
exactly. Claiming so alleged travel insurance.
And one of the things that makes me think, like, and agree with some of the people, maybe there is a PR stunt. You know, Kanye West was in the middle of a concert and somebody came up to him and told them, and then he stopped his concert. Right, and so there's video.
I know, it's all very choreographed.
Yeah, because the thing, imagine you're in the middle of your 45-minute set on the cruise and somebody, you know, has got news about your wife. Are they going to come up to you in the middle of the show and be like, hey, Mark, listen, just in between jokes, just so you know.
Yeah.
Nobody would ever do that.
No. I think you're right. So joking apart, do you smell a rat here?
No, I just hope it is a rat.
Yeah, because they do say in the article that the ratings for Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which is the reality TV show that she stars in, keep falling. So this stunt would come at a good
and
good
a new
time.
Season is about to launch.
I think whatever we've learned is whether or not it's a stunt, the bottom line is whatever happens to this woman, good, bad or indifferent, is always good news financially, because now she's twice as famous as she was with twice as many followers, and, you know, it's a kind of virtuous circle for her, isn't it? And I've actually seen her virtuous circle. It's on the internet still. It's got me through many a dark winter's night. You've been listening to Mark Dolan on FUBAR Radio. I'd like to thank all of the team for putting the show together, and Jacob and Adam and the whole gang here at FUBAR Radio. I'd also like to thank Dimitri and also Leo Kirst for joining us. Dimitri, Twitter handle, please.
It's at Dmitry Bakunov.
God, how simple is that? Not that simple. You've got a complicated name.
Simple, yeah.
But you'll get there in the end. Take time out of your schedule. Google it. The man is a comic genius. And go see him at an iconic venue near you. You're all over the place, aren't you?
Yeah,
of course you are. You're a popular man. Leo Kurse, what's your Twitter handle, please?
It's at Comedy Leo. I don't have as many followers as Kim Kardashian, got to be honest. Maybe I should rob myself later on.
That would be very fun. You've been awesome, Leo. You've been awesome as well. Dimitri, I've been Mark Dolan. We'll catch up with you soon. We've been eating the news. Keep it FUBAR. Joey Page is next.